I'm Stephanie Wilson, and you're listening to Freedom Over Fascism.
Number one, people need to feel that they have been heard by someone. So rather than going into communities and telling them what you're going to do for them or telling them what they want, do what our democracy centers do. And they go into communities and they have people tell them what would make our community whole again. What would make us feel strong? What would make us feel safe? We only have questions. We don't have any answers. And what we found was every community gave us a different combination of things.
Hi, friends. Today I talked to Andrea Miller, the founding board member and executive director of Center for Common Ground. While we spoke on Thursday, November 2nd, this episode will publish on November 6th, the day before Election Day. We spoke about Virginia, where the entire legislature is up for election because of newly redrawn district maps. We're all rooting for progressive candidates to win the state house to counter the MAGA governor, Glenn Youngkin. I loved talking to Andrea. She is wise, she is organized, and boy, is she focused. Her organization works hard to turn out the Black vote. Center for Common Ground has opened democracy centers in Black communities with high numbers of infrequent voters. They hold town halls. They go door to door to find out what the community needs the most. Then they find a way to help. This might mean providing food. It sometimes means teaming up with other organizations to provide school clothes and warm coats. The only cost for their services? Phone banking, canvassing, and other pro-democracy work. It sounds simple. Listen to what a community needs and provide it. Yet it's not the typical approach to mobilizing people who don't often vote. But it's been effective so far in Georgia and in previous Virginia elections. All of this is underpinned by a methodical reliance on good data and organizational software. I invite organizers and candidates in MAGA-captured states to listen. Andrea has so much to teach. Find a way to use better data and campaign tools. Then listen to the people. This combination of listening to the voters, identifying them more accurately, and starting conversations that will continue over time is powerful and often overlooked. My conversation with Andrea is a treasure trove of how to organize communities. And as she has taught me to say, I'm crossing my fingers, toes, and eyes about tomorrow's election results. Now for our conversation. Andrea Miller, welcome to Freedom Over Fascism.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Stephanie.
I am so glad you're here. Today is Thursday, November 2nd, but when people are going to be listening to it, it'll be the day before the election. So I would love to talk to you about the Center for Common Ground and what you do. You're the founding board member, and what you think is coming up on Election Day, even though there's early voting, and this Election Day is usually election season these days. I would love to hear about what you're up to.
All right. Well, as you said, I am the founding board member and the executive director of Center for Common Ground. And what we do is we are one of these 21st century civil rights groups, as it were. So our specialty, our superpower is we turn out in federal years, we say the BIPOC vote, Black, Indigenous, people of color. In state years, in odd years, it's more of the Black vote. because the entire Virginia General Assembly is up for election on November 7th, we are turning out the BIPOC vote in Virginia. And you are so right, Stephanie. Virginia has an election season. We have 45 days of early voting. So we started voting on September 22nd for the November 7th general election. So it is an amazing experience trying to deal with 45 days of early voting. And the State Board of Elections has never in their history provided the full list of all early voting locations, dates, and times for all 133 Virginia counties. And I really got after the governor this year because, as a lot of people know, the Virginia top of our ticket, all of our statewide offices, they were elected in 2021. They are all Republican. So the governor, through his PAC and the Republican Party, put up a wonderful site listing all the early voting locations, dates, times, phone numbers, everything for all 133 counties. So my little response to him was, aren't you the governor of all Virginians and not just the Republicans? So you put this on a partisan website and you don't provide this information to Virginia Elect, the official state website.
What did he respond to you when you said that?
They responded a little bit. They made the State Board of Election website look a little better, so that when you went there, it was like, oh, they fixed it. But then when you really looked at it, you're like, well, this is the same 12 counties they had up here before. They just put them in a drop down.
Yes, the voter suppression that you don't necessarily realize, the purging of the rolls, the not putting up of the information.
The early attempt to prevent the city of Richmond from opening early voting locations in the predominantly Black and serviced by public transportation areas of the city. Now, he did respond on that one because we wrote letters and people called his office. So literally the very next day, he was like, the Board of Elections, the city, the county Board of Elections, they're new. They don't realize that it is the city that has full control over their early voting locations. And I was like, thank you for that statement. That means I will not have that problem anywhere else in the Commonwealth because you made it clear. It is the locality that controls early voting, not the Board of Elections. And one of the things that I think a lot of people missed in 2021 was that in Virginia, the State Board of Elections and all 133 county boards, they are the party of the governor.
All right.
Yes.
So what actions or shifts in thinking do you need to help people understand to overcome that?
Well, we're working very, very hard in this election. We have phone banks. We've been texting. We've got people, because this is Virginia and we've got democracy centers in Virginia, we've got people actually knocking on doors. One of the people that I've known for a long time and we work with filed a suit against the governor when we found out that the governor was illegally revoking people's voting rights after their rights had been restored. So there are a lot of subtle things that can happen in states. and you really do need to understand the rules and the laws of your states. Virginia is the last state standing with lifetime felony disenfranchisement. And the Virginia Constitution of 1902 says it is solely the governor of Virginia who has the power to restore voting rights to people with felony convictions in their past. Well, what this governor did is three previous governors had worked toward making restoration of rights automatic when you were released from prison. What this governor very quietly did was he just ended the practice. Didn't tell anybody, just decided he wasn't going to do it anymore. And it wasn't until one of the Virginia state senators confronted him and said, "All right, governor, tell me, how many people have you restored this year?" that the governor said, "Well, you know, I've decided that we're going to go back to the original intent of the 1902 Constitution. And I was thinking, I hope," the state senator said, "you mean the racist intent of the 1902 Constitution, where they basically said, we believe that lifetime felony disenfranchisement should, for generations to come, mitigate the power of the," air quote, "darky votes."
I hope that senator did say something like that.
Yes, yes, yes. I always say stuff like that.
Well, I say stuff like that too. I would love to hear, you mentioned democracy centers.
Yes.
And I would love to hear about, and I'm sure our listeners are curious about, what those are and what kind of difference they make in terms of turning out BIPOC vote.
Yes, yes. Well, right now, our democracy centers are only in Black communities, and they go into communities where 55% or more of the Black people in that community no longer vote. So when we look at an area and we look at their voting history, and we see 55% of the people are 0-for-3, meaning they have not voted in the last three federal elections. They're registered, but they're not voting. Mm-hmm. That area is ripe for a democracy center. So our first Virginia Democracy Center was not in Richmond. It was in Roanoke, Virginia. And the community they were in, the people were 55% were 0-for-3 and 63% were 1-for-3, meaning they showed up during presidential elections. Now, we opened that center in April of 2021. Fast forward to the Virginia primary in June of 2023. 75% of the people in that community showed up and voted in a primary election, which now has a Black woman running for state senator in Southwest Virginia.
Wow. So not only is it not a federal election year, but a primary.
A primary.
So how many democracy centers have you got in Virginia?
Let's see. There are, well, some are regional. So independent, standalone, there's two. There's Roanoke, Virginia, and then there's Lynchburg. And then out in rural Virginia, we have what we call Southside, which is a regional democracy center. So it's got Mecklenburg County, Lunenburg, Brunswick, places that unless you have relatives there, people are like, that's really a place, and they wouldn't even know where to look on the map. Those are the old tobacco counties. Virginia was a tobacco state. Those are the old tobacco counties. And then over in Hampton Roads, we have the Virginia Beach Norfolk Democracy Center. So yes, they're like, we've got cars and we just go wherever we need to go. The other thing about the Virginia Beach Democracy Center is they are home to our paid phone bank team. So Democracy Center, they've got one very, very simple goal: to take inconsistent voters and turn them into voting rights activists. And so she started off with four young people, two of them she was related to. They recruited their friends and they grew to a team of roughly 15 people who made 100,000 phone calls between August 21st, which is when we started making calls for the general election, and September 15th.
Wow, unbelievable. Just the paid group, right? Not the volunteers.
Yes. They're young, they're Black, they're 18 to 38.
So can you tell me a little bit more about Democracy Centers? And you said that their goal is to turn partial-time voters into activists.
Exactly, right. Exactly.
So how do they do that?
Well, a good deal of it is, remember, we don't teach civics anymore. So people have no idea how government is supposed to work. So when it makes it hard in many instances for people to be able to tell, is government working or not? Now, based on the clown car that's going on in Washington, D.C., anybody can see, all right, government is not working. That up there in D.C., that is, we don't know what that is, but we know it's not supposed to be like that. So one of the things is some democracy centers hold town halls. Other democracy centers, they just like going out and talking to people. Many of our democracy centers, like the one in Roanoke, they survey the community. They would go out and they would knock on the door and they would have conversations with people about what's going on in the community and what did they think the community needed to make the community better. And then they would invite people to, in summer, watch movies that they would show outside on the wall of their office building. And, you know, they have popcorn and hot dogs. And they'd invite people to volunteer. And then they started talking to people. Do you know neighbors who maybe are food insecure or maybe don't have coats and hats for kids when it's going into the winter? And then they started supplying that. And the cost was, come to an event, write postcards with us, or learn to make phone calls and tell us somebody else that's having a problem. And then it just grew and it just grew and people were having fun. And they started seeing that they really and truly did have power. So imagine how that community felt when on primary election night, the upset was that this Black woman who had gotten in the race very, very late, basically had very little money, beat the hand-chosen successor of one of the incumbent senators.
That is impressive. You said to me on one of our conversations that hungry people don't vote.
Because government is obviously not working for them.
Right. So one of the ways to fix that is to help them.
Right.
You meet their needs.
You feed people. Lynchburg operates a feeding center 360 days out of the year, and they do two meals a day. One of the big problems we have in the U.S. is affordable housing. So in Lynchburg, they decided, this is probably back in 2019 that they were going to begin to build houses for the homeless. Build houses for the homeless. Well, Finney is now the largest landowner in the city of Lynchburg. They have two communities and they have started building their houses. Three more communities have contracted with Finney to come in with their plan. So they are not building tiny houses for people. They're like, people who are poor and have been homeless, they have already dealt with being stigmatized and they've dealt with trauma. Let's not compound that. So they built three-bedroom, two-bath homes that are energy efficient. Finney, by training, is a solar engineer. And the houses retailed for $165,000. In the community are full services. People who have been homeless have gone through trauma. So there is mental health counseling. There is job training. There is transportation, because if you can get together enough money to be housed, that doesn't mean you've got enough money to buy a car and to get insurance and to buy gas and all the other expenses that go with that. So they provide free transportation to get people to their jobs and wherever it is that they need to go. They've got child care. They've got agreements with Goodwill in the area where when it's time for school, people can come in, get a voucher, and they can get two outfits and a pair of shoes for each school-aged child. So everything to ease trauma, get people comfortable and stable, and then begin to build from there. They were doing that before they became a democracy center. And they were like, we've got people who are coming in who are homeless, who think they can't vote. And it's like, you can be homeless in Virginia and you can vote. And so people can use that as their address until they get one. And they also did a prison ministry for men who have been released from prison. There are a lot of services that are available for women. There are not very many services available for single men. You know, it's like you made a bad choice, live with it.
Right, for the rest of your life.
Right, forever, yes. And that gets me back on my little rant about restoration of rights. Restoration of rights on release from prison is very, very important. Actually, voting in America is not a right. We do need to change the American Constitution. I love Representative Mark Pocan's constitutional amendment where he makes voting a right. Every citizen of the United States who has reached voting age, whatever that might be, so if we lower it to 16, keep it at 18, whatever voting age shall be, shall have the fundamental right to vote in any election held in the jurisdiction in which they reside. There are no unless or, you know, in lieu or anything. It's just, boom, you're a citizen of the United States. You've reached voting age. Great, you're voting. People who have committed a felony did not lose their citizenship and they did not get younger. So why? Other than the racist, we really want to mitigate the impact of the darky vote. Jim Crow has been replaced by James L. Crow, Esquire.
Well said. Well said. So with what you've been doing and the democracy centers and every seat up for election in the Virginia State House, I don't want to put you in the position of being a prognosticator, but I'm still going to ask you whether you're optimistic about what's going to happen on election night.
All right. Well, in this election, abortion is on the ballot. Virginia is the last southern state where abortion is still safe and legal up to 26 weeks. Voting rights are on the ballot. In the 2023 legislature, we saw 40 bills introduced to roll back all the voting rights we had won since 2021. So they wanted to roll back early voting. They wanted to get rid of permanent vote by mail. They wanted to get rid of vote by mail. They wanted to get rid of all drop boxes. They wanted to reinstate photo ID. These are all changes that Virginia has made since 2020. Virginia, we have our own version of the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. We have our Virginia version, courtesy of Representative Jen McClellan. So what I'm telling people is people understand what is on the ballot here. We also have, are we going to tell people the truth in education, or are we going to fabricate even beyond Disneyfied version of history? And we need to drastically roll back the governor's horrible policies on our LGBTQ youth, and especially our trans youth. So what I am saying is, fingers, toes, and eyes crossed, 25-55, 25 Senate seats, 55 House seats. So that means I hold the Senate and pick up three more seats. And it means in the House, I win eight seats. In 2017, we won 14 seats and we lost seat number 15 by one vote that was drawn out of a fishbowl. So we have done this before.
Well, fingers, toes, and eyes crossed for you. So a lot of our listeners are from MAGA captured states, completely MAGA captured.
Yes.
And we want to help inspire people to action, to effective action. And we want to feature people like you who have been doing this a long time and have found success. If you were to have any thoughts for, say, Indiana, non-Southern states, where voter suppression isn't just in the BIPOC communities, it is across the board because no one's felt government working for them for a long time. Would you have any suggestions for how to move forward in terms of organizing in a way that might help reverse the loss of freedom and democracy?
Yes. Number one, people need to feel that they have been heard by someone. So rather than going into communities and telling them what you're going to do for them or telling them what they want, do what our democracy centers do. And they go into communities and they have people tell them, what would make our community whole again? What would make us feel strong? What would make us feel safe? We only have questions. We don't have any answers. And what we found was every community gave us a different combination of things. It's not like people don't pay attention and have no idea what's going on in the world. They do. They just feel that their voice doesn't matter. In our rural counties, basically they said they wanted Medicare for all without saying Medicare for all. And again, in a lot of rural communities, all the hospitals closed when they went for profit. There is no profit in running a hospital in a rural community. There just isn't. So they were like, you know, we need a system where everybody gets health care, you know, and what they described was Medicare for all. And they're like, okay, this sounds like Medicare for all, but we're not going to write that because that's not what they said. And then there were some very basic things. Amazon and UPS did not deliver at night because the mailboxes did not have reflective numbers and the drivers couldn't see the mailbox numbers. So we're like, okay, wait a minute. We're talking about the numbers that go on the mailbox, right? That the numbers that go on the mail. This is the problem. People are like, yes, this is a big problem. So we go out and buy a bunch of mailbox numbers and then help you install it. This is going to really help your community. Yes, it will. Sometimes the solutions are very, very simple. It's a trip to a couple of hardware stores. How many houses are there in rural communities anyway? And you buy a bunch of numbers, and then you go with people, and they come out, the community comes out, so you're like gluing these numbers on the mailbox. You're going, I'm gluing numbers on a mailbox. And people are like, oh my God, I'm going to be able to get my prescription medication now. Because if your medication comes by mail, because there's no drugstores in rural America, and the drivers can't deliver at night, that means it takes longer for you to get your medication. So we have to leave our world of privilege behind and let people who government is not working for them at all tell us what is not working. And then if it doesn't require that we pass the law, we just need to run to the hardware store. Let's do that and celebrate with the community. Our rural democracy centers sign people up for broadband, courtesy of the Infrastructure Act. So for $20, they get a tablet and they get a year's worth of broadband.
Life-changing.
Yes. 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 Things that we take for granted and don't even think about. Well, of course you have internet. Well, not if you're poor and you live in a rural community. When they announce they're bringing internet, you don't have $89 a month for internet.
And so to convert helping people solve their problems into helping people vote, how does that work?
Well, it's very, very simple. The thing with the numbers on the mailbox, that had nothing to do with anybody that was elected. Well, theoretically, it was the city council. They could have allocated money to buy the numbers for the seniors and put them on. They didn't. As people tell you what their problems are, we normally write them down and form a palm card. And then we go back and we talk to people about how we can solve the problem. So again, you want a dialogue. Let people be heard. Let them give their ideas. And then we can attach it to policy. Well, if we could get city council to agree, so many people believe it is their U.S. senator or their congressperson that's in charge of everything. And no, they're not. I love the saying that one of my democracy center leaders has, and she says, the more local the election, the closer the results are to your front door.
Very well said. Again, do you find in Virginia that in rural areas, particularly, that there are enough progressive or Democrat or whatever you want to call it, people to contest the races, to run for city council, to run for county, whatever you guys have, to run for state house? Because like in Indiana, 30 seats went uncontested.
Right. Right.
So people didn't have a choice. Yeah.
In Virginia, we probably have maybe 10, maybe 12 seats where we did not have a candidate. And we've seen some chicanery where there was a seat in Fairfax County. Someone noticed that on one sheet where people had to gather signatures, she didn't write her address. and they were able to go to the Board of Elections and they invalidated that sheet, which meant she did not have enough signatures to be on the ballot. And now the question is, 3,000 people have already early voted in that district. Will they count the votes that that candidate got? So that gets interesting. So yes, you can start local groups that have nothing to do with the Democratic Party. I'm president of National Women's Political Caucus of Virginia. We endorse candidates. And because we endorse candidates and my background in elections, we phone bank, we text bank, and we send postcards for those candidates. People, when they look at running for office is expensive. They look at, am I going to have any support at all? And when there is no support, people are very reluctant to put themselves out there and run. I was part of a group called She Should Run. And one of the things they said was, in order to get a man to run for office, one or two people ask him, and he's like, yeah, I should be running for office, and he's all in. They figured it took roughly 7 asks to get a woman to agree to run for office. Because we as women, we go through the, oh, I'm not worthy. Oh, nobody's going to vote for me. Oh, I don't know enough. You know, when right. we go down all this negative downhill spiral we go through.
Right. That imposter syndrome that we, yeah.
Right, right. Oh, I can't be who people are looking for. Yeah, you very well may be.
Exactly. And if you can get some support, which is what my group does, is figure out how to train people and their volunteers, because they aren't going to be able to afford a campaign manager.
Right.
And
in some instances, based on what I've seen in Virginia, they might be better off without one. I've seen some really scary stuff.
Yeah, true. Yeah. But often it's their best friend who doesn't know anything either.
And that works. Now, here's something that I very, very strongly believe. Okay. I am not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm not really anything. I believe, and one of the things that we've been working on at Center for Common Ground is building our own digital campaign infrastructure. That's just what we do. More right. organizations need to look at being able to do that. Now, I specialize in the BIPOC vote, and generally in the South, although people did talk me into working in Wisconsin. They were not able to talk me into working in Ohio. As I spent so much money in Wisconsin, I ended up being really, really short of funds to be able to do Virginia. But it's a concept. Programs like PDI, L2, and some other things are not that expensive. What's really expensive is getting the people who know how to properly run them. And right. once you have that campaign infrastructure where you can see who your voters are, where your voters are, you can do targeting. These are all the things that campaign managers would / should do, just many do it very badly.
Right. And they use the tools that the party gives them, which is generally a piece of.
Right. Yeah. Well, okay. I happen to like PDI. Why? Because they buy cell numbers every 90 days. So that means I am able, when I can afford it, to text because I've got cell numbers. So when we do phone banking, we're phone banking with cell numbers. Why do we love cell numbers? Because unlike home phone lines, cell numbers normally allow you to leave a long voicemail message.
Right. I remember when I was phone banking for the candidate I worked for last year, if nobody picked up, I just tried to text them because it might be a cell phone and it actually worked yeah. a lot of yeah. the time.
Yes. But yes.
But we also know that so much of the information that you get from NGP Van hasn't been updated in years.
25% of their addresses are wrong.
Right.
And if their addresses are wrong, I don't even want to think about what percentage of their phone numbers are wrong. Now, part of it, there is a reason for that. Many, 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 many campaigns, and even literally until last year, people did not know how or bother to use the digital tools properly. They printed out paper lists and they let people go out and use paper, and nobody ever bothered to update the system.
Right.
We have never used paper. We don't allow paper. We train people to use the system as intended. So we get information, how good or bad are these numbers? And we can really be able to look at what was our impact.
That is so important. And in places like Indiana, there's so many places where people just write the states off because they're so far behind. But you need to start somewhere.
Right.
And so hearing from you on some really basic stuff is helpful, because it can feel very daunting.
Yes.
And none of the national organizations will even consider coming in.
Now, here's another idea. The people from the communities, they are going to have to decide, like Annie Lou Hamer, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm going to do it my damn self. And
right.
They're going to need to make that decision. I ran for Congress in 2008, and the Virginia 4th Congressional District is very different now from when it was then. So much of my district was heavy duty rural, what my mother would say, a one horse town, and the horse left. If she had seen some of these towns, she would have said, and the horse left years ago. And what I did was I went to county fairs, because every little county had a county fair. And I set up a table and or stood outside. And as people came in, hi, I'm Andrea Miller. I'm running for Congress. What would you like your congressional representative to do for you? You're like, what?
Mm-hmm.
And no one had ever asked people before. Everybody always came in and said, oh, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And so what I found is people initially didn't know what to say, but then they would come back and they would say, I didn't know what to say because nobody had ever asked me. I had to stop and really think about it for a minute. And you would have these conversations. So I want you to picture this. 2008, I'm running for Congress. And I had raised only $37,000. $20,000 of it was mine. I won 41% of the vote in that district.
Not bad.
Talk to people. Give them the chance to talk to you. You as the candidate, shut up and hear what the people you are allegedly running to represent, what they want, what they need, what they care about. Find the common ground and then have those conversations. And there's going to be things where you're like, all right, we're going to agree to disagree on that. I had a lot of the hunting guys. My nephew is a hunter. So, you know, I was used to the guys in the hunting gear and walking around in the caps and the whole bit. And, you know, I would walk up and I would talk to them. And now back in the day, the very first bullet point on my literature was keep American jobs in America. You're like, we can agree with that.
Exactly. Yeah. There's always something that you actually do agree about.
Right. Yes. Yes. I mean, it may be the sky is up. I agree with that. All right. We've got a starting point.
Exactly.
All right, and plants grow in the earth. We got two items that we agree on. I gave you two of mine. You give me two of yours and let's see where we go from here.
So basic, so human.
Right.
But so many people don't think about building that connection first. Right.
We're all people and we need to connect as people. We care about our kids. We care about our pets. We want to have a safe place to live and food to eat. Most of us can agree on that. You know, we get squidgy as to how we get there, but we can pretty much agree on those basics. And if I get sick, I'd like to be able to go to a doctor. Oh, wait, we don't have a doctor for three counties. All right, whoa, okay, wait a minute. Well, what are we going to do about that? So yeah, the community will tell you. And, you know, we've been really upset about
that. Right. That's what you build on.
Oh, and then in light of our marvelous new Speaker of the House, when I was campaigning in 2008, there would invariably be people who would say, well, you know, because they would all be talking to me. I think one of the problems we have in America is we don't have prayer in school. At which point I would say, you want prayer in school? And a lot of people are like, yeah, we want prayer in school. I was like, okay, then that means it needs to be Jewish prayer. Like, what? Well, you know, one of the oldest religions. No, not Jewish. Well, all right, then Catholic. That is the oldest Christian religion. People are like, what? And you see, once we start trying to do prayer in school, we run into whose prayer? People are like, we never thought about it that way. And then people go, did she just disagree with us? And they were like, yeah, but in a really nice way. And I think we were wrong.
Right. Well, hopefully that kind of mental flexibility will return to the United States.
Yes, yes. Yes.
And we can help it get there.
Yeah.
Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you would like to say?
Oh, no. I loved our conversation. I really, really did. I generally don't talk about that 2008 period, although it was really, really fun. I'm never doing it again, but it was really, 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 really fun. I think we're going to have a great election year, and we are looking in 2024 at engaging in even more southern states, and we are looking in 2024 at even engaging young people in a very, very different way. I'm hoping we will be able to launch a game that I first conceived of about 2 years ago that I'm now calling Elect Me. It's a game where people run for office and they develop a platform and all the rules are real based on their state. So we teach people to run for office and to build a platform and figure out, oh, yeah, this is how I want to connect with people and get them thinking about what they believe and why they believe it.
And does this exist?
In my mind, it does.
In your mind.
In my mind, it does. In my mind, it does.
Well, now it exists in my mind, too. So I think that's phenomenal.
And my daughter is a game engineer.
Wow. You know, that is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant, especially in places.
Don't teach civics.
Civics. Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So
we got to do it that way.
Yeah.
I heard somebody say, let's redo Schoolhouse Rock to be relevant today. Yes. Funny way. You can watch on YouTube. You know, like.
If you can, and again, We need humor. If you can get people to laugh, laughter opens up. If we can get people to laugh, then we can start that conversation.
Thank you so much, Andrea. It was such a pleasure talking with you. I learned a lot and I had a great time.
I know. And it's like, didn't we just start this like 5 minutes ago? Where did the time go?
Thank you for listening to Freedom Over Fascism. And thank you to our editor, Benji Wilson. Please join our Patreon at patreon.com/freedomoverfascism. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please drop us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. We thank you for choosing freedom over fascism.